Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
You are my bastards and wenches, and welcome to the official 100th podcast episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. I say official because beforehand we had the original radio show over at 91.7 WMWM Salem at Salem State College, where we did 143 episodes there. And then there was also a sneak peek episode before I slowly started bringing it back as a podcast on a more regular basis. So yes, technically, this would be the 244th episode of No Borders, No Race, if you want to add all those together, but for the sake of keeping things less confusing, we're just going to be going by, like, the official podcast list. So once again, welcome to the 100th podcast episode of No Borders, No Race. And today, I'm being joined by two of my friends from across the ocean, coming straight from Japan. These two people have been instrumental in keeping my radar fresh in regards to talented Japanese artists. First, he is the manager of Morlise and the runner of the Uncle Tom's Music Garage concerts that are currently being held at the Livehouse Onga in Chiba, Japan. Please welcome Mr. Tom Oleski.
Hello, everyone, and again, congratulations to everyone at Boston Bastard Brigade on 100 episodes. Hope to hear at least another 100 and down the road. And hello to all you bastards and wenches and undesirable people.
Well, I wouldn't call them undesirable. They're definitely desirable people. Well, my listeners are all desirable.
Wenches. I mean, I figured you didn't think so highly of them.
Well, no. Well, we you know our motto: bastards by name, not by reputation.
I'm sorry.
Yes. And second, you know her from our Nazo Nazo Nyongo segments. She is the front woman for the band Soundless Fool and is part of the Death March. She has also worked on various anime and gaming soundtracks, including The World Ends With You, Final Fantasy Type-0 HD, and K-On! I am so happy to welcome Miss Sawa Kato.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for introducing me, Evan.
You're welcome.
And this is Sawa Sensei here again. Congratulations, Boston Bastards.
It's okay.
Don't forget the wenches.
What's that? Whatever. Congratulations for the 100th episode. Omedetou.
Doitashimashite. So, before we begin the question, before we begin today's episode,
a remix episode.
I have a question for the both of you because a couple weeks ago, we had my friends from Wicked Anime on our show. We were talking about an anime series called Shimaneda, a boring world where the concept of dirty jokes doesn't exist. And we were talking about a certain hand gesture that they use on this show that keeps being censored. And I was wondering if either one of you could help me with explaining to me what this certain hand gesture means over there.
I wonder what that actually the gesture itself is.
Okay, so okay.
Can you describe how?
Okay, so first and foremost, make a fist.
Okay, fist.
Now stick your thumb between your index and middle finger.
Oh no.
What does that mean? It has been bugging us for the last few weeks.
Are you serious? You're asking this question to female Japanese at this moment? Hey, come on. Count me as a female, guys.
I do. I was a little bit worried there was going to be something like that.
Well, we just wanted to talk to an expert.
Well, I won't deny that. You really don't know what this means, or didn't that guy really didn't explain it to you?
No, we don't know. We all just assumed it was just a lewd gesture that meant nothing over here in America.
Oh, okay, that's understandable.
Yeah, because we don't have that gesture here in America, and we're wondering what does it mean when someone sticks their thumb between their index and middle finger.
Okay. Then first, let me start by telling you that how it's not good to do in a public place in Japan, or at least people who knows about Japanese culture. That's like first thing that I want to introduce.
Yes.
That gesture.
And impromptu nozzle nozzle for our listeners here, by the way.
You're right. It could be part of nozzle nozzle. Okay. Secondly, mostly they don't use, because it's like a really male and
sexual.
Yeah, kind of sexual, but more like slang kind of gesture.
Slang gesture.
So it's not like official public kind of gesture.
Okay.
And thirdly, it's very sexual. Very sexual. How do you say?
To make it easier for yourself, does it just mean sex in general, or is it something about one's anatomy?
Is it the Franks or the beans?
No.
What? Sorry, Tom. What does it mean?
Is it the Franks, the beans, or the taco?
Okay.
No, Evan.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of blushing right now. Asking, but I've just been so curious. What does this hand gesture mean? I Googled it. No one knows the answer to it.
Really?
Really?
Then you can post somewhere so that somebody else can search the reason or the meaning of it. And it's been part of sex.
Okay.
Yeah, it's part of. It's like motion.
Okay. All right. So it's that. It's kind of like, all right. So it's equivalent if. All right. So in America.
You know what? I'm sweating so much right now.
Okay. So in America.
This on Friday night.
I'm sorry. Komenasai. So in America, in America, the equivalent of the gesture is like when someone makes an O with one finger, with one hand, and then uses their index finger and inserts it that way. That's our American equivalent of that.
Exactly.
Japanese are more efficient.
We just need one hand for this.
And you can just finish with your right hand or left hand only. You don't need to
finish with my right hand myself.
Oh my god. Oh, I have dragged this show down.
Wait, are we recording? Sorry.
We are recording.
Are we clear on this topic now?
We are clear on this topic. Thank you so much.
Fantastic.
Now we will
you
no
longer. Great students. Thank you.
Oh, the best.
All right. So, let's get the show started. For today's episode, we are going to be spinning artists that have inspired the creation of No Borders, No Race, as well as a couple that have kept the show afloat and filled with hope that one day one of them would make it big outside of Japan. And as for our subjects, we're going to be talking about Japanese music, how we got interested in the music scene, the bands that have influenced us, who deserves to be bigger, and artists whose popularity we can't quite understand. So, with that, we're going to get this playlist started. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And today we're going to start off with a band, or rather a duo, that really impressed me the first time I heard them. And this was back when they became known in America for their theme song to the cartoon Teen Titans. Are you two fans of Puffy?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love them since I was a teenager.
I know, and I've been hearing rumors that they're supposed to be coming out with a new album soon. I know they just released a single a couple weeks ago, so hopefully that means a new album will be coming out soon.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm all a flutter.
Same here. So, this song that I'm about to play served as the opening track for the U.S. release of 2003's Nice album, and it goes by the name of Planet Tokyo.
Come hit your ride.
2008 album, Waikyoko. Like many of his fans, I became aware of him with his collaboration with the late, great Nujabes with the song Battle Cry, which would serve as the opening theme for Shinichiro Watanabe's classic Samurai Champloo. So, the first subject I want to talk about with you guys is the interest in the Japanese music industry, and specifically for you, Sawa, just the interest in the music scene in general. And my question is, what got you interested in wanting to be part of it? What made you, Tom, want to become like a manager for Molise? And Sawa, what made you want to become a musician in general?
If you don't mind, Sawa, I'll go first.
Yes.
For me, it was always about the live experience and the intimacy of live houses and the fact that music there, even for maybe not like professional or signed artists, could be presented in such a professional format, that it was very, it felt very intimate, and yet they seemed like, you know, like gods on the pedestal. It was originally with Molise about now I think 8 years ago that I first went to a live house and saw them play. And again, seeing them perform and seeing a really passionate band that close and yet in that professional setting, really, it really, I think, can, for an American who doesn't always see music in that format, it sold me right away. That was a big part. And once I got to see more of their shows, I saw more other great bands, most notably Sawa, actually, a year later. And I just got into the network of it, and it was really kind of a more of a bottom up. It wasn't from the famous bands that I got intrigued. It was really more of the bands that I could see just on a regular basis.
Now, my question for you, Tom, is what brought you to Japan in the first place?
I actually probably, unlike most of the people, had no, most of your listeners, that is, I wasn't interested in anything in the pop culture. It was actually for work. And my background is also, I was asked to transfer. I was an engineer at the time for a robotics firm in Massachusetts.
Oh.
And we're starting a new office in Japan. And I am actually fourth generation Japanese, so I knew very little about anything of my heritage. So that was the original reason I went over, because I just was more intrigued about finding out more about my mother's side of the family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Hey, you're lucky. You at least have some part of Japanese in you. I'm just all French, Canadian, and German.
No, that's
Well, I think you got like 30 different kind of culture inside of you. I only have one.
It's okay. It's a very interesting culture.
Very much so.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, it's why we do this.
Japanese culture.
So, Sawa, like, what made you want to become a musician? Like, who influenced you? Like, who inspired you to, like, pick up a guitar? And who inspired you to, like, start writing songs?
I'd like to start from when I was, like, 4 or 5 years old, when I was a student of an international school in Nagoya City. My dad used to drive me up to school every morning and afternoon for like 2 hours drive because school was located so far from my house. And in the car, he was always listening to Italian or French pop song. And I just loved singing or listening to those, even though I didn't understand any of those languages. And what I learned at school was English. So it was kind of, I don't know, music was just always surrounded around myself. And yeah, that was a very natural thing for me. Piano was there, electron was there, and when I was 5 or 7 years old, I just started playing piano with my original way, and my parents said, like, if you like music that much, you can go to music school. And so I started going to private music school to learn electron, like an electric piano thing.
Oh, nice. Hmm.
And then I got into instruments so much, so I pick up trumpet or euphonium or saxophone, flute, many different kind of various instruments. And I just love playing instruments. So.
Wait, how many instruments can you play?
Well, I'm not that good with any of those, but I just kind of play most of them.
Because I was about to say, we have our own like Japanese version of Beck on us right now.
No, not in that level, please. Just a tiny bit. I just love playing with the sound and music. But I didn't like singing at all back then. And the change just suddenly came when I quit music once after graduating university.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, actually, to be honest, when I was in the United States for one school year as an exchange student, I had a chance to sing in front of people, and that was like first time ever I felt it's fun to sing. And I introduced one of old classic Japanese songs titled Sukiyaki. As many American people know, in Japanese we say "ue o muite aruko," look up and let's walk.
I believe the band the 5678s did a cover of it for Jack White's Third Man Records label.
Yeah, that one, Sukiyaki song. Mm-hmm. And I've done the same covering thing at a cultural festival in the United States. And also we covered like current Japanese pop song, which is Yuzu. Yuzu is like unit with a 2 acoustic guitar and 2 guys singing.
Okay.
That was very much fun playing in front of various regional and cultural people in front of us because the school that I attend was like a mixture of various culture, which was located right next to Washington, D.C. So I felt like doing band or group sounds, playing music, singing, playing instrument is totally fun, enjoyable thing, including singing at that moment when I was 17 years old.
Nice.
And then I wanted to do band. But my parents hate rock music, so I couldn't do anything when I was living together with my parents. So I moved to Tokyo. I entered university in Tokyo and started up a band as a fun enjoyment.
That's awesome. So you didn't want to like revolt against your parents. It was like, no, Mom and Dad, I want to be a rock star.
Yeah, and recently, finally, in like past few years, my parents start to acknowledge what I'm doing.
That's good.
It took like over 10 years, but still, I'm happy that now they are like smiling with what I'm doing today.
So, Mrs. and Mrs. Kato, thank you so much for finally acknowledging your daughter's amazing talents.
I'd like to tell that to my parents tomorrow when I call them. Thanks, Evan.
Not a problem. But So I guess it's my turn, because with me, my interest in the Japanese music scene, of course, began with anime. I was first really introduced to, like, the music through a composer by the name of Yoko Kanno, who did the work for Cowboy Bebop and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And when I was listening to these soundtracks, I couldn't believe, like, that someone, anybody, even from Japan, could create something that just didn't sound like regular scores. They sounded like solid albums that just so happened to serve as an anime soundtrack. Are either of you familiar with Yoko Kanno's work?
I know that title that you just mentioned, Bebop.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me, no. Sorry.
Really?
No, not an anime fan.
Oh, okay.
I'll leave now. Goodbye.
I'll come back, Uncle Tom.
No, you're good. You're good. But around the time I was getting into Yoko Kanno, I also was introduced to, they're technically seiyu, but they're also singers. I was introduced to Megumi Hayashibara and Yui Hone, and I became a fan of theirs because of their work in the show Love Hina, and they had a couple of their songs on there, and I really liked what I heard. But it really wasn't until, I want to say 2003, yeah, definitely 2003, when The Pillows entered my life because of Fooly Cooly. And that's when things really just started to jump into hyperdrive. I soon then became aware of artists like Larkon Ciel, Asian Kung Fu Generation, Guitar Wolf, Shingo 2, Puffy. And when The Pillows first came to America to perform, and I still have the ticket stub right there hanging on my wall from that show that I saw them at, that's when I first heard about the South by Southwest Festival, where artists from all over the world would come and play in Austin, Texas. And here, I realized that these artists really wanted to make it big in Japan. Oh, rather, wanted to make it big in America. Some of them were already big.
They were ready to make it in Japan, right?
Well, some of them were, some of them aren't, but
Right. The
four bands, for me, awoke this purpose to help spread the Japanese music gospel, if you want to call it that. And sadly, two of them are no longer together. Those two are the Spunks and Gitto Gitto Hustler. And they were kind of like the male-female equivalent of one another. Used to tour with together. And when I heard the Spunks, I didn't even think like punk rock like this was still in existence. I thought it had like faded from obscurity from like back in the 70s and like 80s when like Sid Vicious died. There went this style of punk rock, and I was just like amazed that it was still alive and well. And the two other bands that really, really did it for me were Electric Eel Shock, who I still will say is like one of the best live bands you can ever see in concert. And the other one is Sushi Mamire, who really taught me that not only can women rock hard, but they can rock harder than their male counterparts. So
yeah, couldn't argue that point. Those bands are awesome. I had the privilege of hanging out with Electric Eel Shock backstage before a big festival in Vietnam. And they're also just awesome people to hang
they
with
are.
And drink with and talk to.
They're just so modest.
Yeah, they're great.
And, you know, it was around this time, like, when it was about 2006, I went to my college radio station and I asked if anybody was interested in doing a J-pop radio show. Me thinking that someone else would do it because I figured getting a gig on the air would be tough. And then it comes to find out less than 3 months later, and after scourging up enough music thanks to MySpace free downloads and other illegal sites, No Borders No Race was born. Well, I have to be honest, it was like back at that time, trying to scourge up Japanese music was hard, even by importing and such. But thanks back then, when MySpace was like really big, people would make fan like pages for the bands, and you could like download free music from them, and like be like, all right, I've got enough material now.
That must have been really tough, having like a completely new set list for every week?
Yep. And you know what? I rarely ever repeated a song on my radio show over at WMWM Salem. And that alone is really tough to do.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine the money it would take just to invest in buying, getting that many new albums to keep the playlist going. So, yeah, kudos. And frankly, I'm sure every band that got played on your show appreciated it, you know?
Yeah, you know, bands like Electric Eel Shock, Tsushima Mire, the Emeralds, they always wrote back to me just saying how grateful they were that someone was playing their music outside of Japan. And that was what keeps me going. That's what kept me going back then, and this is what keeps me going right now.
Kudos. Yes. Another 100 episodes. Yay!
Arigato. So I get... So I guess that's our stories on how we got into the music scene in Japan. So for the next song that we're going to be playing, I figured, Tom, you can do a little bit of an introduction talking about this specific band since you are their manager.
Well, I think I'm more of an advisor. Rinko would never give me that much power to actually say I'm the manager, unless there was somebody speaking English saying, "Where's your manager?" So, to introduce, this was the first song I ever heard by Molise, and it was because I was actually trying to do some filming work, just looking to help out any sort of kind of amateur film production. And it just so happened a person was hired to film just a very basic black and white PV for Ms. Panic. And we just went to the bassist at the time, Ikuhiro's place, and filmed all day there. And it was just maybe 4 or 5 hours of just hearing that song. And I was so sold on Molise by the end of it. I was just like, oh, my God, you guys are fantastic. Somebody, more people have to know about you, you know?
And by the way, this is how Tom and I first got into contact with one another. You wrote an email to me saying, hey, I would love it if you played this band on our show. I said, absolutely. You sent down their CD, and I was just blown away by Dr. Ray.
Yeah, that was the good old days, right?
Yeah.
Back where... We're spreading the gospel.
And we still are. We're still spreading this J-pop gospel.
Well, you're still young, at least.
We're all still young. Come on. We're all in our 30s. 30 is the new 15.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure. I'll go with that.
Come on, Tom.
I was just saying I'm not in my 30s, so I'm... anyway, let's play the song.
All right, so this is Molise with the song Ms. Panic from their album Dr. Ray.
Yeah.
2006 film of the same name. I first became aware of Noodles when they opened up for the Pillows on their first tour in 2005. By set's end, I had bought all of their albums and DVDs they were selling. Has that ever happened to you? You hear an opening band that you get so blown away with, you just run to their merch booth and be like, give me one of everything!
Absolutely. It was, I think that's how I reacted when I first heard Sawa. Believe it or not.
Really?
Yes.
I believe you. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did that ever happen with you, Sawa? With any bands?
She bought her own CD, yeah.
Well, I haven't gone to CD shop for a while, to be honest.
Oh, all right. All right.
She's a snob, you know that.
No, it's not like that. Come on. Oh, I didn't bought this one.
Oh.
So I have the soundtrack and the work CD that I've worked.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I bought some CD when I was in Peru two years ago.
Oh, nice, nice. That counts.
It was 2 years ago.
That counts. So let's talk about the artists that inspire you. Still, like, inspired you to keep on going. Artists that have, like, you know, helped you become like the person or musician that you are. And I want to start with you, Sawa, because I'm curious about Japanese artists over there that have inspired your own songwriting.
and Japanese musicians, as probably you may imagine, that I was more of American or British or some overseas artist.
And you know what? That
Japanese, but I do listen to Japanese musicians. I caught your words.
It's okay, and I kind of actually wanted to bring this up because every band I've ever interviewed that has been from Japan, they all list, like, English language artists. I've never heard anybody say, oh, it was because of, like, ex-Japan that I became a musician, or it was because I was listening to the Blue Hearts when I was a child. It's always been American artists, and I'm always surprised that there's never been a Japanese band that I've interviewed that has mentioned a Japanese artist as their biggest influence.
That's interesting. But maybe many of the musicians or rock band group members are based on rock music, so when they start digging to the root songs, then it'll just go back to blues or rock and roll or rockabilly or some music, sort of music like that. But, well, I used to listen a lot of Nakajima Miyuki, maybe you know. She's one of the very popular folk singer in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tsuyoshi Nakaguchi on his early ages. Albums were one of my favorite and still are. So I started with folk songs, I'll say, with the Japanese songs. And then Blue Hearts or the Bees, like popular Japanese rock band. And, High Style Dark. Japanese punk bands.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alright. Tom, what about for you? Like, who are some of the artists besides, like, Melisse from Japan that have, like, inspired you to keep on working in the music scene?
If you don't mind, I'd also like to mention some bands that are foreign but based in Japan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think, because I work a lot behind the scenes, it also has to do, the talent and ability of the band is good, but it also how easy they are to work with as far as organizing and arranging shows. And the fan response, if a fan comes to me afterwards and says, well, thank you so much for bringing this band in, and you know, I've never heard music like this before, I'll come to another show, that's going to really make a big impact on me about that band. So it's a combination of those things. It can be, I mean, there can be some amazing musicians that are just totally difficult to work with. They don't talk to their fans afterwards. They can put on a great performance, but everything else kind of turns me off to them.
Right.
And that being said, I have a list of about 10 bands, really, if that's okay.
Okay.
One band is Aeronauts. They're Osaka-based originally and moved to Tokyo. Phenomenal live show. They've been playing together for about 16 years. I think I've given a track or two for...
Yeah, you've given me a couple of their songs. Yeah.
Yeah. Great, just great people, great to work with. Always put on a great show. A blues band called In the Air. I really like a lot. Mainly blues, but also some rock. Again, crowd pleaser, very good for my at my shows in Chiba. There's one, it's half foreign, half Japanese. It's more, they have like real like drinking music, kind of, if you imagine like a George Thorogood and the Destroyers vibe, the Mutekis, I really like a lot. There's one that's kind of a throwback to, I guess, more like 70s punk, and it's a English band called Slow Wolves Club, I really dig. There's one that's very like White Stripes influence called The Lower Lips. They're just like 20 and they're fantastic. They just put on the most amazing show. They don't have any recorded material yet, but that's coming soon.
Keep me posted because I'm very curious to hear what they sound like.
Sure. There's three others and they're all hip hop bands. Foreign fronted. But one is Beatjackers 2.0, which is really good. Another one's Rock and Flow. A good friend of mine, Rashad, is the lead for that. And another one, Zach H. All of those performances kind of inspire me. Melisse is first and foremost the main influence. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, I've already been to London, Hanoi, Atlanta, just backing them, and you know, when they go play live festivals, so that it's such a rich catalog of experience to work with them. They've really been the main reason I kept going.
Awesome. No, those sound like really great bands. I'm looking forward to hearing more about them in the near future. Sure. And I'm looking forward to, you know, just hearing, just hoping that they actually make it to the big time, at least over there in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I'll keep you posted.
Absolutely. Thank you. So for me, there are three bands that besides the ones I've mentioned previously, that really just keep on making me astounded by how good they are. Sadly, I think one of them is no longer together because of a recent tragedy. But the first band for me that has been, every time I hear one of their albums, like, my jaw drops to the floor, and that is Mono. Like, when you hear Mono, the kind of melodies that they play, they're more fitting for, like, a symphony hall, not some sort of, like CD Rock Club. They're like a reverse Apocalyptica. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Apocalyptica. They're a metal band, but they play with cellos instead of guitars. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So where
amazing.
So where, like, Apocalyptica would create metal music with classical instruments, I feel like Mono is creating these classical pieces using rock instruments. And they're one of the two bands, one of two bands in the entire Inception No Borders No Race where they've taken the album of the year pick in 2009 for Hymn to the Immortal Wind, and in 2012 for My Parents. They're a band that just every time they release a new album, I when I put it on, I just stare at my stereo and just listen, because the euphoria that comes from that comes out of the speakers when they play is just it's almost indescribable.
Mono, don't miss them.
Absolutely. No, do not miss them. The second band, I've got to say that one of the most exciting live acts I've ever seen, and I was privileged to see them before they really became huge, when they took part in the Japan Night Tour back in 2007, the Goju Kaitans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of them. Sorry.
They're talented, they're funny, and they're probably one of the most humble acts I've come across. And it was amazing just to see how popular they got soon after this Japan Night Tour. They wound up doing, like, the theme song to the popular anime series Gengeki no Kitaro, and then they wound up working with one of my favorite directors over there in Japan. I know he's not, like, super popular, but he's really popular in the grindhouse scene, Noboru Iguchi. They were able to work with him on the short film Rock and Roll Magic, and I believe it was Danny, the lead singer and guitarist of the band, worked on the movie Zombie Ass Toilet of the Dead. and they're just awesome. I've loved everything that the Goju Kaitans have released as well, and it's just it's cool just hearing such, like, a neat, like, old school rock and roll vibe within their punk comedic styles. And
so they have a sound, by any chance, I've heard the name, but do they sound anything like P-Lander Z or something? Like,
no, they don't sound anything like P-Lander Z. It feels more like straightforward punk rock, but their lyrics are funnier.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the third band, and it breaks my heart to talk about them because their frontman passed away a couple of years ago, Bloodthirsty Butchers.
Yeah.
Some of the finest, heaviest art rock to come out of the woodwork. Like, almost every one of their songs, like, just sounds like an adventure. Like, you were being pushed out of a plane a few miles up, and your parachute wouldn't open until you were, like, right near the ground. And I was like, I forget who it was that introduced me to them. It was about 2007. It was their album Banging the Drum. And just that opening track where it's just, I forget the drummer's name, but they're just, like, just banging on their snare drum. And it just sounded like, it sounded like a march into battle. And then right afterwards, the album just jumps into hyperspeed, and I was just in awe when I was listening to Banging the Drum. And it broke my heart 2 years ago when I read that Hideki Yoshimura passed away. And when I read that he died, I just, like, stared at my computer screen for 20 minutes. And to be honest with you, I had found out that he had passed away almost a year after it occurred, which is why... I know that broke my heart out even more. It was like, this is one of my favorite bands in the world, and I just found out the leader of it passed away.
Oh man!
And
I wouldn't take it too hard that way.
I mean, know.
I'm sure they forgive you.
But like, it's kind of like why I went on that rant last year of why. It kind of does stink to be a J-pop DJ outside of Japan because you're not close to the music scene. Because they were like the number one band I wanted to see live over there, and I don't think that's ever going to happen, sadly.
Wow. Well, at least I'll do a show for you. I'm trying to comfort you. I'm not good.
I know.
Although it's very interesting to hear that how you are able to dig into raw Japanese music scene from overseas, because even if I'm living in Japan, as like you are, Tom, too, but it's really hard to dig like a raw music scene, because on the surface, like all the other different countries, it's all covered by the major artists or major music, and it's just so difficult. But you're managing it for years after years, and still today you're digging into the raw, truly, how do you say, the spring of the music of Japan. So I'm just amazed by hearing your stories and
all the
recommended artists. So as you, Tom, it's just fantastic to hear how people are so interested in Japanese music. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Don't touch my stuff. Deep here as well. I mean, like, I could follow a path in the live house scene, and you could, Sawa, and Evan could, and we may never meet, you know? Like, we could follow
Say never.
No, I said, but just because it's such, it's such a deep collection of bands and genres and styles, and, like, you know, in Tokyo, it's like something like 1,000 live houses.
It's just so, a chaotic situation everywhere.
Right, so, I mean, and a lot of bands, I think, Sawa, you and I both don't know, but you know, obviously you've connected with them and they have a big following, but we've both followed our particular groups and our fan bases, and the bands, frankly, they're not huge, but just within our own, we're so immersed in our own scenes that our scenes might never connect, you know. That's just how complex and deep that the whole Japan scene is.
And it's good that it is eclectic like that, because it just shows what kind of personality, how individual people are. But yet at the same time, when we bring all these different music scenes together, it creates such a beautiful world.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the Japanese music scene, and we're going to be playing a song from a band that you just mentioned, Tom, P-Lander Z.
Oh, okay.
My introduction to them was via the show Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, or as it's known in Japan, Takeshi's Castle. Which was like a funnier version of Ninja Warrior. The better version, in my opinion. I still wish that B. Takeshi will go back and do that show. But,
let's send a message.
Maybe. We'll try some other time. So the song I'm going to play from them comes off of their 2003 record, P-Bone Steak, and this song is called The Destroyer.
やばいやばいやばい、本当に彼って真面目な彼、やばいやばいやばい。
Remix of Kaiser Chiefs' Na 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 off of the British band's Lapper of Honor EP. This certain remix came to be after Polysix opened up for Kaiser Chiefs on a UK tour back in 2006. Polysix is one of those punk bands who took what Devo was doing back in the 80s and then cranking it up to 11. And this band became known here in the States for their theme song contribution to the cartoon Super Robot Monkey Team Hyperforce Go. So let's talk about Japanese artists that you feel more people should know about, and even bands that you don't understand why they're popular to begin with. And did you guys want to start with bands that deserve to be popular, or bands you think shouldn't be popular?
I would say this. There's, I don't necessarily like the system, but I don't necessarily want to bash the artists either.
Right.
Because they've stumbled onto the formula, you know. They've obviously present the mass, the mainstream, to something. They tapped into something that they want. So the fact that it doesn't necessarily clash with what I like isn't really their fault. So I don't know if I'd want to say it like they don't deserve it, because
okay, maybe more of you don't understand why they're popular.
Well, then I mean you can pretty much get into the idol scene in general for me. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I do understand in the fact that they are the agencies that run them are very powerful, and they can, and they're very efficient, and they're very good at their jobs. They have a very polished image that they present to the audience. They show the personal side when it works for them, and they show it and they hide it when it doesn't work for them. They put them in commercials, they put them in TV, they put them on talk shows. So those agencies are good, but I wish they'd leave a little more room for artists that don't really fit that image. You know what I mean? I wish
Right.
there was just a little bit more. Like, I think in the States, frankly, there's more room for it. There's more room for a wider range of music. So I do kind of get frustrated by the idol scene, but I understand that's what, you know, the Japanese general population wants.
And what I don't like about the idol scene is just sometimes how some of these agencies treat the artists in general. Like, they don't let them have their own personal lives. Like,
No. Like.
I don't like the fact that a band member may get kicked out because, oh, they were caught on a date with somebody, or we took a picture of one of these idols and they walked out of a love hotel. Ooh, how scandalous. Oh, It's like
gossiping that.
That's also the story you're hearing. They could take any sort of, they could take a picture of someone crying and spin it any way they want, and they can, and frankly, they can threaten that sense that you're going to go with this story. You know that member, and that member would just due to the power of the agency and just compliance in general in the Japanese culture would just say yes, yes, I'm going to do it. So. You never know. It could be even more insidious than that if you want. There's so many things that I think sometimes there's manufactured scandals.
Yeah. I agree on that idea. Well, because, you know, like Evan just said, I think many people think that the Japanese population are wanting idolized characters at this moment, but I kind of have my personal wild guess, this is, but is that the mainstream or the company or the agencies are just trying to create the in-style thing, and they're just trying to create in-style because it's more easier to sell their products or services or whatever that relates to one personalized character that they created. So, like, there are lots of news or gossips going on at the same moment that many idols are, or like teenage young females are failing to become real, truly big star idol because they dream about becoming a person like AKB or somebody on top of the mainstream. But once they know the reality, there are just too many idols today, and like, rest of the field is just too chaotic.
And not to mention, you've got like some of their fans who would go out and buy 2,000 copies of their latest single just so they could get those like meet and greet tickets.
Right.
And I always felt like that's not how you do popularity. That's, in my opinion, that's just kind of creepy when a fan does that.
And there are lots of incidents reported for those kind of new method of meeting and greetings. So it's just kind of overreacting or overflow of the idolized era of today, Japan today. But it's kind of interesting to watch from the other side.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see nobody being hurt on.
No, absolutely not. I mean, like what happened last year with that incident at AKB48? I was like shocked that someone would attempt to hurt them, and you know, an olive branch as a piece, I wound up playing one of their songs because you know I felt like you know these are human beings, these are people. They don't deserve to be hurt like this. They don't deserve to be treated like this, and they don't deserve to feel like that any moment that they're going to be threatened by either some crazed fan or someone that may just not like their music.
I think that's the point that you just mentioned. They're human. They're not just character in anime or magazine or games. They're still human, so we have to treat them as a human.
And that's why I feel like a lot of people have lost when it comes to like pop idols, especially like AKB48 and Morning Musume, maybe even a little bit with Perfume as well. It's just that these girls are just they want to play music and they want to make people happy, but the way it's being brought out there, the way it's being pushed out there, it's not the right way of doing it.
Let's just not forget.
Let's not forget. So
they're happy to be presenting on a stage.
They are happy. That's what I don't want to take away from. Like I respect these girls. I respect that they are doing these things. I respect that they're making their audiences happy. I just wish that they became popular in a more traditional sense, not in the way that they did.
Yeah, you know, I think you said that pretty well, actually. I couldn't have said it better. But, I mean, I think it's a little bit reflective of the work culture here in general, frankly. I think it happens, you see kind of that just very, really rigid, strict hierarchy in almost every company, not only in entertainment. So,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be too surprised if that happens all around the world. You just don't hear about it as much as you hear about it happening in Japan.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So, I know we talked in length about that, but when it comes to artists that you don't know why they haven't hit the big time yet, are there any groups that you feel, besides Molise and Sour's Fool, of course, who you guys feel like more people should know about? Like, right, like, who do you think should be selling out, like, Budokan or even the Tokyo Dome?
Ones with the real, the band I had mentioned before, Aeronauts, and that you can look them up at Aeronauts, AeronauTS.org. I think they have the polish and performance ability, as well as just raw talent, to pull off some of a show like that. Outside of that, there's actually a classical duo. It's a classical violinist and a classical guitarist called Era, E-R-A, and it's Akihisa Tsuboi and Natsuki Kido that I was just blown away by. Outside of that, a lot of the bands that I like, I don't know if they're ready for the scale that you're talking about, but I would say Molise Aeronauts, Era, the rap band Rock and Flow, actually, I really, really enjoy. Rock and Rap, actually.
Yeah, I like them, too.
Yeah, they got a real stage presence to them. Mm-hmm. You can find them on Facebook. If I can... So, sorry.
It's okay.
I'll look that up after.
Yeah, I totally agree with Rock and Flow, as well as Mutakis, that which Tom mentioned earlier today. And also, I'd say Andy Kinley's band is one of my favorite as well.
Yeah, Kinley's yeah. Really good, yeah.
Kinley, actually, he's a singer of the band, Andy, had performed in the soundtrack of The World End With You, coincidentally with me, and we just met each other coincidentally on a live stage in Shibuya one night, and he was like looking at me saying, "I think I know your name," and I was like, "I think I've heard your voice." And that was the way how we met each other, and that was the first time I ever heard his original song, but that was very cool, mixture of rock and reggae, and it was just cool, so cool. Please go to uncheck Andy Kinley.
Nice.
Oh, one more. Harp and Soul. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're four beauties. Amazing instrumentalists and vocalists. One of them, Amy, I can't pronounce her last name, but she sang at least on the Attack on Titan soundtrack, I believe. Mm-hmm. What's her last name, Sawa? Do you know her?
Sorry.
she's worked with the other Attack on Titan singer, Yoko Ikasa.
Yeah, I think so. I just know her. She's very. She does a lot of appearances in the local Tokyo scene, and she's amazing.
Cool.
As is her group. So Harp and Soul, look up that.
Awesome. So for me, one band that really like when I was just starting to get into the Japanese music scene, actually, when I was out in Japan, I was watching Space Sour TV, and this band's like first single was just playing on the channel, and they're called Monobright. And when I was over there and I heard this single, like, my friend and I, we rushed over to like Shibuya, and like we bought that brand new single, and we bought their first mini album, Monobright Zero, and I had to like spin it on my radio show as soon as I got back, because it was a sort of rock and roll that they were like one of the first bands from Japan where I couldn't think of an American equivalent to compare them to. And that, and ever since then, Monobright was like the only band that's ever happened with me. And I loved their first album, Monobright 1. Monobright 2 was great. I wasn't a fan of Adventure or of Acme, but I really felt like they got their groove back when they took a cue from legendary punk band MC5 and recorded their 2012 release, Shinzo Live Rations, entirely live in front of an audience. And I just thought that was really cool that they would do something like that. And they're a band I feel like should be a lot more popular. I was hoping that they would when they did the theme song for the cartoon Gintama, but I don't think they've become more popular than since that time.
Yeah, but I've heard of them in the scene, certainly. They play some of the same live houses as Molise has, I think. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And one of the other bands that I really love, too, that I feel like should be more popular, I can kind of understand why they may not be mainstream in Japan, but at the same time, I feel like they're too unique to not be noticed. Boris.
I've heard that, too, yeah.
Boris?
It's psychedelic metal, and Pink and Smile are just two albums that I recommend to any metal fan out there. And they do a great job of drawing their listeners in. Even when they release an album, and that album just includes one 70-minute song.
70
Didn't you that once, Alan?
What?
You did that once, right? You did one 70-minute song for an album.
Oh, no. Never. Oh. Don't ask me that question.
Okay. I see. It's only the black market, I guess.
Maybe.
Well, I'm kind of...
really a song. Sorry.
Yeah, it's really a song that they just play continuously. Granted, it's not a 24-hour song like the Flaming Lips have done, but still, just to do a song for 70 minutes from front to back, that still takes a lot of hard work to do so.
That's phenomenal. Yeah,
no doubt.
I have to check that out, actually. Please send me a link, will you?
I definitely will. And, you know, I'm hoping that because they contributed to the anime series Ninja Slayer, Studio Trigger's recent show, I'm hoping that they get more notice because Studio Trigger's awesome, and it was awesome. And it was so great to see that they were fans of Boris as well.
Yeah. Mm. You always love it when a band that's not quite so famous takes that one step up. You're like, yeah, but I was there first. Kind of thing. So
exactly.
When other people hear it, you're like, yeah, well, I knew them, you know, before.
And that's why I loved like what Studio Trigger's been doing Ninja Slayer, because each episode ends with like a different theme song, and they've brought in Boris, they brought in Melt Banana, they brought in Electric Eel Shock, they brought in all these amazing indie artists that I've been a fan of for years. And now because of their contribution, because that this show has not only been popular in Japan but also here in America and in the anime scene, that more people are hopefully going to be introduced more to their music.
Next up, Molise. No.
Oh. Well, actually, no, Tom, you're correct, because next up we have one of Salwa's songs from her self-titled debut album of Salwa's Fool.
And yes, that song is called Psycho.
Yes,
yeah, that's right. And can you know?
Yes, it is called Psycho. And Salwa, yes, you were right. And I figured, Salwa, can you talk a little bit about this song?
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. Thanks for letting me introduce my song. This is a song that I wanted to create to energize people, because the meaning of the psycho came from two meanings in Japanese and English. And first, Japanese, it means psycho, means like great, perfect. And in English, as you can hear from the sound, psycho is like psychic or psychedelic psycho thing. Yeah, so this is a song that I want to energize people as well as to be interested in Japanese word, because I have been performing with many different people with various cultural background, like Tom, or organizing events. There are like people from so many different countries, right, Tom?
Absolutely, all over the place. They drive me nuts, damn it.
So it's not only Japanese people. We're jamming and having a fun event here in Tokyo. So I wanted to have a song that we can enjoy all together at once, with very poppy, pop and catchy phrase on it.
Excellent. And for our listeners, this is Salwa's Fool from their debut album, and the song is called Psycho.
only way that I can take. Day, as you know, I was always measuring it. The distance of you and me, we're getting closer every time you're making another move.
Not a
Electric Eel Shock with Dice to Try from their 2007 album Trans World Ultralock. Still one of the best live bands I've ever seen. One of those acts that should be on those lists of bands to watch in concert before you croak, that's for sure. And sadly, our friend here, Tom, has to run off and do something. But before he left, I really wanted to give him the chance to promote whatever he wants. So, Tom, please take it away.
If you're in Japan on Sunday, September 13th, I'll be organizing and producing the segment in the Narita World Music Fest 2015 in the Aeon Mall in Narita. I'll be putting out five bands be playing that day. Mutekis, Rock and Flow, The Ne'er-Do-Wells, Aki and Las Damas Primeras, and Arthur Pentameter. If you can come down, it's a free show. And the 12th, if you're in the States, and if you're in Buffalo, New York, Melisse will be playing a big festival called Music is Art Festival. Now this, you can see it at www.musicisart.org. Very big festival. It is being run by the bassist of the Goo Goo Dolls, Robbie Takak. And at that show, they will be releasing Resonance Love, their last album, with two bonus tracks, and that will be two remixes by Robbie. Support his label also. It's an indie label called Good Caramel Records.
A lot of great artists on there.
Yeah, absolutely. C-H-A-R-A-M-E-L Records. And it's an indie label that has released albums by Shonen Knife, Sushi, Mami Ray, Lazy Guns Brisky, Molise, DJ Sashimi, Pinky Doodle Poodle. Support him, support that at goodcaramel.com. And I will be coming out with a podcast called the Chiba Music Garage sometime in the future when I get my act together.
And you know I'm going to be right there to help you promote it, man. Don't worry. Like, what's that... Once it starts going, man, that's going like all on like the B3 Facebook page and on our Tumblr and everything. So don't worry. I'm going to make sure you get your listener base, man.
Thank you so much. You're always there for me, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime, man. Because, you know, you've helped me out with introducing me to great artists, and I just wanted to return that gratefulness back to you, man.
I'm feeling the love. And Sawa, stop avoiding me.
I'm not. I've just been staying quiet. Nothing, right? Because I love hearing great friendship talks.
Oh, I see. Okay. But, yeah, stop being, like, sick when I say let's go have dinner or something like that. And, yeah.
You'll see me in healthy and in a good shape very soon.
Okay.
Hopefully.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And, again, congratulations.
Thank you so much. All right, man. You take care.
Bye-bye.
It's so great to hear you, Tom. Bye-bye.
All right. You still there? Oh,
yeah,
nope.
I'm here.
Okay. All right.
Tom is
all
not,
right.
I guess.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So now it's just the two of us.
Oh, yeah.
Now I know we touched a little bit about this in the previous segment when we were talking about the pop idol stuff, and I do want to ask what your opinion is too on the state of the Japanese music scene over in Japan. Like, in your opinion, what can be done to make it better if you feel like it should, you know, keep away from, or rather push itself away from the whole manufactured idol stuff that they've been doing?
Well, just please take this as my personal opinion, because I'm working in both major and underground music scene in Japan.
Oh, absolutely.
The last few years, and I've seen both with some amount of distance from both, I guess, because I'm not like 100% major artist or 100% underground artist. But it seems like major music industry or agents are having kind of tough moment in last past years and today because of the changes of the way how music products have been sold in Japan. Recently in Japan, there have been streaming service just started about a few months ago, I'd say, and they're seeing if it's going to work or not in this Japanese music culture or Japanese culture or Japanese people in the way how they do the monthly or yearly payment, the payment thing.
Yeah, the monthly subscription.
Yeah, the subscription thing.
Kind of like how like we have a Spotify or what exactly. iTunes Radio is doing and everything. And I think it's smart that they're finally doing stuff like that, because I don't know about you, but 3,000 yen for a CD is ridiculous, and I still can't believe they charge that much for a CD, where over here in America, it's the equivalent of like 1,400 yen.
Right, so that kind of system is not general in Japan yet. Because of the idols, I don't know, they're just trying to maintain that old style CD album system in Japan by using that idol system, because they know that the CD can't be sold in that big price anymore, so they add a ticket for meet and greet, and you know, as we just talked, discussed about it,
yeah,
there was sad accidents happening for that kind of new system. It doesn't go well,
right,
in Japan. So,
well,
a hard time.
Well, I feel like if they were to do still charge 3,000 yen and want to add some of those, I mean, yeah, it's cool if you, hey, buy this album, you get to go to a free show. But I feel like if they were to do that, they should limit it to people like only one person can buy this CD, the specific version of the CD, because we want to make sure that we have enough people going to the concert. We don't want one person to buy like so many copies of the CD and making it so like these idols are only playing to a handful of people where they were hoping to perform for a bunch of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do, yeah, exactly. So the way how I'm selling CD is, for example, I price my CD album in the same amount, the price as most of the Japanese CDs are being sold, because it costs a lot to create here in Japan. But at the same time, I decided to sell my album in much, much lower price on iTunes or Amazon MP3 style, because I just wanted to align with a global global standard price for
right.
music today. So,
and I understand that, because I know you're a musician and you're just trying to you're making a living off of what you're loving to do.
Yeah, and at the same time, I want just people to hear me or know what I'm doing. Just because of the price, if they didn't choose my song, it's such a pity, you know.
I know, and I can kind of and I do definitely understand that, as someone who, you know, who has a lot of other friends too, even here in America, who are still trying to struggle and trying to find their audience to hopefully use like these sort of like streaming sites, hopefully will help them to build that up, hopefully to bring them, you know, more butts in the seat, if you want to put it that way.
I don't know if you know about this news, but you know, the one that you just mentioned earlier, Spotify service,
yeah,
couldn't come into Japan because of this cultural difference, I heard.
Really?
So currently there's two or three live streaming services with, what was the word you said?
Subscription.
Yeah. Subscriptions. That's new words from me. No, it's not new words, but I just keep forgetting.
It's okay.
So, iTunes music radio station thing, and Line Music, and Awa Music applications. These are like new three services that just landed to Japan a few months ago, and seeing if the Japanese people is going to get interested in by purchasing subscriptions or not. But they still haven't started the real service yet, so I think they're seeking or observing how people are reacting in Japan at this moment. It's very interesting.
It's kind of like how they're finally been bringing over like Hulu and Netflix over to Japan, because it's shocking that these things haven't been embraced by the Japanese public, because I figured it would be like a godsend. It was like, finally I don't have to be at my TV to watch the shows or set my DVR when I'm away. I can actually come back to watch it on Hulu or Netflix or all these other things. And it shocks me that these things haven't become popular over there in Japan, because it's such a convenience.
I know. And Hulu was here for past few months or year, I guess. But Netflix is just coming in next month, in a few days.
Yeah.
So it's very still new to us, and I don't know how it's going to work in Japan, because somehow Japan is very isolated, and many various media platform or types, as well as TV system here. So,
mm-hmm. Because let me ask, there's still places in Japan where you can like rent DVDs and Blu-ray, correct?
There are a lot, yes.
Okay, because I was wondering about that, because when you have, because that's another thing that surprised me, because with there being, with DVDs and Blu-rays being priced at the way they are over there too, like you'd be paying, again going back to anime, like you'd be paying almost 6,000 yen for a Blu-ray that only has like 2 episodes in it. And I always felt that was crazy that someone would spend that much money just for 2 episodes of a show, where like over here in America, like I bought recently, let's say hypothetically, like recently I bought the recent Miyazaki film, The Wind Rises, and over here it costs $30, where over in Japan it'd be like almost what, 6,000 yen or 7,000 yen for that same Blu-ray set.
If you purchase a Blu-ray set, it's going to cost that much maybe. Yeah, but here in Japan, even you don't have to go to CD rental shop. Well, you still can go, and there are more service that many people start using is like disc rental service from online. So they just click and select, and then the disc will be shipped and sent to your mailbox. So they open it, watch it, and then put it back to the post box.
Which is what Netflix started out as.
In a disc version?
Yeah, really? Well, they still do the disc version too. I'm a subscriber to Netflix, so I use both the streaming and the disc version too, because sometimes what they have in disc version, they don't have for streaming.
That's interesting. I wonder if Netflix is going to do the same service in Japan or not. The service itself is still undercovered at this moment, so we gotta wait for at least 1 week until they really start the service here. Mm. It's exciting.
And I hope it becomes successful over there, too. But getting back to the Japanese music scene, even though it's still, you know, a lot of pop idols and such, I'm still happy that there are still, like, new bands that are coming out of Japan that have been really surprising me. One of the bands that... I talked about this band with you online because they're associated with a band that you really love, Pay Money for My Pain. The band Noisy Cell, who does nearly all of their songs in English, and they balance out great melodies and strong screamo elements.
Oh, yeah.
And another band that's kind of associated with Noisy Cell, because they actually wound up contributing a song to the exact same anime, Bradio.
Bradio.
They've got this sort of funk vibe to them, like George Clinton and Le Chic. And they're a band that I'm hoping becomes really popular over there, because there's such an excitement to their sound that I hope that a lot of people really get introduced to.
I want to check out those bands too. Some of them I knew, some of them I didn't. So can you send me the link?
I will. I'll definitely do so. And, you know, and I gotta say this, and I have to say this too, and I know we talked a little bit about idols, but there's one idol group that just really proved me wrong. Just, they've been proving critics wrong, metalheads wrong, and because they just wound up being so good, they took two concepts that shouldn't be going together of idol pop and death metal, and just what baby metal has been doing.
I kind of have a guess right now. Please, go on. What?
Baby Metal is a group that proved me wrong. When I first heard about Baby Metal, I was like, this is going to be stupid. It's going to suck. Pop and death metal, that's not going to go together. And they proved me wrong. Mm-hmm. The songs, they are manufactured the same way as all these other pop metal groups. But they're good. They're awesome. They have a stage presence like unlike any other pop metal group. And they've got And they got bands like Metallica and Marilyn Manson all backing them because they think what they're doing is fantastic. And the fact that they're headlining London's Wembley Arena in April, that's a huge thing, not just for Japanese pop, but for the Japanese music scene in general.
It's gonna be legendary for sure. Yeah. Sigoroi.
And
Baby Metal concept was outstanding from the beginning, and it's no surprise that how people in global are reacting today. They just rock, and the quality is so good, even though they're like cute little girls, like, you know, headbanging right on the stage.
Exactly. And it's amazing that us here in America have warmed up to Baby Metal as well. Like, you hear about all these other groups and everything that don't make it because, you know, it's Japanese pop idol stuff and it doesn't really mesh. But when you add the whole metal scene to it and seeing these bands playing on the same stage as like Marilyn Manson and Slipknot, Anthrax, Slayer, and then being given this love from these bands in return, especially from Judas Priest. When I saw the picture of Baby Metal with Rob Halford and Judas Priest, I was like, okay, this is the real deal.
Yeah. Sugoi ne. Amazing.
And I feel, and I'm hope, you know, there's a part of me that says, all right, I'm hoping more bands like Baby Metal come out. But then at the same time, I'm like, I hope Baby Metal are the one and only because I want them to stay unique.
I don't think any other can do the same with the Baby Metal. They're just already in a really high area, and the quality, everything is so good. They're cute and they're good. So nobody wants to imitate and see how different they are compared to the Baby Metal, I guess. Or if there is something similar, won't go out that far as they did.
Yeah, I forget their name, but I recently heard like another band that was trying to emulate Baby Metal, and they're a four person group, and it just didn't sound good. The band just, even the vocals, it didn't sound like that they were trying. It lacked the emotion that Baby Metal had.
You know, the first one always gets the highest. Second one, no, not the third one either.
well, you know, I'm also crossing my fingers that your friend Lady Beard and his troupe Lady Baby, hopes to get out there.
They're another weird, how to say, but. Well, speaking about Lady Beard, I just met him back in 2011 when there was huge tsunami was striking on east side of Japan on March 11th. Mm-hmm. That was the night that I first met him on a Hong Kong stage night as part of my first overseas tour. And there was a very weird guy with a piggy tail and green dress wearing and beard and, you know, headbanging in front of the stage. And I was like, what the fuck? And after the show, he just came up to us and said, like, you guys rock. I love your sound. I was like, well, thank you, but who are you? You know? That was the first time we ever met, and we coincidentally figured out that age were the same, and I heard about his true story back behind the scenes and how he had been working in Hong Kong back then. And he also told me that he had a dream coming to Japan someday and doing some kind of entertainment, as well as, you know, he's a pro wrestler, so he wanted to do a real pro wrestling in Japan. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Before coming, we had one tour together with Osaka and Tokyo, and he was already doing that headbanging, metal anime, screaming, and weird acting performance style on his own. And I'm kind of, how do you say, surprised, and I admire him with all his hard work. Now he's touring somewhere else in Asia, not only in Tokyo or Japan, but doing many different better things. And now he even got a corner in a popular bookstore or toy store in Tokyo.
Really?
Yeah, it says Lady Beard with the DVD and CD albums, books, photograph books,
etc. But because, you know, Tokyo is such a small city, just too many people in one same place. So we had been chance just coincidentally meeting each other on the street. And it was like, he was doing a shoot, photo shoot on the street of Harajuku or somewhere.
Yeah.
And I was doing my photo shoots as a model that day too. So he was together with camera person. I was there with the camera person. But he was dressed in like Lady Beer style, and I was dressed in like model style, so we didn't really figure out each other while we were
calling. Yeah, you couldn't find a way to collaborate both the styles into one photo.
Yeah, I know. So, but I found that it was him, so I was like, hey, Lady Beer, oh my god, it's you.
But it's really cool. Like, I was just looking because he was over at Comic Cat this past weekend, and he was dressing up like Chun Li from Street Fighter, and people were taking pictures.
Before that, he was wearing Sailor Moon quite often.
But it's really cool because I love that song that he does with the Lady Baby, the Nippon Manju. It's got that sort of baby metal thing where it's the cute pop over with the death metal. But I feel like they won up baby metal, adding more of the screamo aspect of the death metal more front and center. Whereas with baby metal, it's more in the background.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and at the same time, Lady Beard used to do the voice actor work when he was in Hong Kong for imported animations, so maybe that's why he got so into the Japanese anime song at the beginning.
Maybe. So he used to dub, like, wait, did he dub it in English or did he dub it in like Chinese Cantonese?
I heard what I heard is into English dub, like Chibi Maruko-chan or Gegege no Kitaro, things like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He have done that. Nezumi Kozo, I don't know the English name or the character name of Nezumi Kozo, the guy in mouse.
Oh, him, yes, Nezumi, yes.
Nezumi, yeah.
The Bucktooth character, the Bucktooth character.
Bucktooth character?
Bucktooth, like a rabbit, kind of, like, he's got, like, big teeth in the front.
Right, the gray guy.
Yes.
Have done English dub of that character, and also Oji-chan on Chibi Maruko-chan.
Hmm. And I know the
grandfather.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's actually very impressive. I did not know that.
Maybe this is a secret. No, I don't think. Yeah, he quit that work when he left Hong Kong, and now he's doing something else.
Yeah.
As a lady beard, living as a lady beard here.
Living as a lady beard.
Well, he is a lady beard.
Sorry. Well, he is the lady beard.
Exactly.
So, no, I'm crossing my fingers that hopefully that they become that he finds a lot more popularity, and maybe hopefully baby metal, lady baby, maybe the two of them could do like a tour together, and it would be one crazy tour.
Hairy cutie tour.
Hairy cutie tour.
We gotta separate both Harry and Cutie. Not yes. Harry Cutie.
Harry Kawaii.
Yeah, Harry Kawaii. Kawaii Core is what he wants to do.
Right? Kawaii Core, no, yeah.
He wants to do.
Hi. So, we're gonna take one last break, and then when we come back, we'll probably say our goodbyes. So, right now we're gonna spin M-Flow. Are you a fan of M-Flow? Are you a fan of Verbal and Taku Takahashi?
Oh, yes. I've been listening to them for so long. They're great. Featuring many different various singers with their tracks, right?
Yes. Yep. And mm-hmm. I love how their albums, like, they sound like a party. They sound like that. They sound like a party that everybody is invited to from start to finish of a record. And, you know, they would do stuff that would later be, to put it bluntly, the Black Eyed Peas would rip them off. And I say rip off because I don't like the Black Eyed Peas and I think M-Flow are far superior. And for this song, this is from probably my favorite album of theirs so far. It's Astromantic, and it's accompanied by K-pop artist BoA, and this song is called The Love Bug. That's the way it's gotta be. Oh, she got la love bug. So what would you say, love? Okay, what more can I say? Oh, wait, Saturday. Just tell me that you want me. Come on. Yeah, you know it. You know what I'm saying? Girl, you got the bug. Bo, this is how we do. Johnny Astro, it's
start attack. From head to toe, but you're good to go. Out, all day, all night. Please believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
So just 9-800, call Rockwell. You a floppy jean?
You wanna rock
yeah.
with me?
What? Drop top, no.
You my medical, yeah.
no
doubt. Tell me what you think of
oh.
me.
She got
she it. She a day, she
a day.
For sure.
So what you say, love?
I'm gonna make a guy
yeah.
girl.
Okay. What more can I say? Oh we Saturday. Baby, shake it like a bartend, no taboo, baboo, right? A specimen, I should can't escape. She all just the two. Study that of us got the kagi hiraku basement. Sanju, relaxation, chimas, international jimatsuki. Sharp like a hamono, bamono, spooky. Horoscope, iranei, koko, iriguchi. For you and I, sore ga manifesto. Kesho, tears, a utiru hodo kando. Love, eat, muso, suru kimi, skoshi ijo. Yodora ni now, dress, silk, chipotle. Time for that, skin, a love story, starts for show. In the helmet, baby. Say it, cause someday, one day, you'll be mine. And make love for the very first
time.
Got it more. So stay. Hold on. Under the spell for real. Each of the talk stay.
So it's gotta be.
She got.
Love,
bug. So what you say, love?
But how things may be.
Okay. What more can I say? Oh, we. Saturday. Saturday.
Just tell me that you want me.
It's an interplanetary love, Jones.
Don't shit the girl on that. It's over in the river.
She loves me.
He loves me not. Oh, he loves me.
She loves me not. Oh, she loves me.
He loves me not. Oh, he loves me.
She loves me not.
Oh, he loves me.
Loves me.
Loves me not.
Oh, she loves me.
Loves me.
Loves me not.
Yeah.
M-F-L-O.
She got
love. So what you say, love?
Yeah.
Okay, what more can I say? Oh, we Saturday.
Just tell me what you want me.
Come on.
So it's gotta be.
Oh, she got
love.
So what you say, love?
How this may be.
Okay, what more can I say? Oh, we Saturday. Yeah, I told you so. La 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 bug.
Yeah.
Fu Generation with Koshigoe Crybaby from 2008's Surf Bungaku Kamakura. And I first heard about Asian Kung Fu Generation thanks to their work on shows like Naruto and Full Metal Alchemist. And, you know, they're a band that I really, really do enjoy. They're one of the, definitely one of the bands that really helped to open up my eyes to the Japanese music scene, too. Are you a fan, too, of Asian Kung Fu Generation, Sewa?
Yep, I'm a big fan of them. They're just so popular in our generation, and so is the rest, younger generation, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm actually still surprised that they haven't done a U.S. concert or, you know, much less a U.S. tour. I know that they recorded their Magic Disc album in New York City, so I was really surprised that they didn't take that opportunity to do even just a small gig while in New York City.
I don't know why they didn't do it. Maybe because of the timing of the agent that there belongs. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's just such a pity.
I know.
There should be a lot of fans out there.
And I agree. Sawa, I really want to thank you for coming on to No Borders No Race today, for helping me celebrate the 100th episode. And I would love it if you would tell our listeners, like, promote whatever you would like. Where can they check you out? Where can our listeners check out your music? When can they hear you? When can they hopefully see you live in concert?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for giving this opportunity to be part of this 100th anniversary of this great show. And I really hope and wish, as Tom said, so that we can celebrate the 200th episode as well. As a promotion, I don't have much to tell, or I still can't tell the details at this moment, but this one thing I can tell. I'm going to United States for some exciting event during Halloween holiday this season this year. So please look forward for me and welcome when I'm there and somewhere in United States. Sorry, I can't tell the details, but all the news and information will be on top of my webpage, which I just created newly fresh few days ago, and its address is sawa333.jp. Last time I had .com page, but now I got the .jp page, so please look for it and search me with just threes and SAWA Sawa, and then you'll find me somewhere, Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot. And it was really, again, a great honor to be part of this. Thank you, Evan.
Not a problem. Anytime. And for our listeners, for the recent news, reviews, podcasts, episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bass Brigade, you can find us on www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on our show, or if you have a question for our friend here, Sawa, for our Naza Naza Diongo segment, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbassbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbassbrigade. And facebook.com/landofesh. For all other articles under the gaming and geek realm, go to egmnow.com/electric sisterhood. And don't forget about the other shows under Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, Issues Program, and the Structure Network. Sawa.
That was fast. Wow. Amazing. You're the pro.
I've been doing, for 100 episodes, I've been doing stuff like that, so. It just comes naturally to me.
We're going, eh? Just amazing. Wonderful. Yeah.
So, for our final song, we got something special. As you all know, and as we've heard in this episode, one of my all-time favorite bands has to be Tsushima Mamiure, whose work has appeared constantly on my top albums list practically every year they release a new album. In fact, they are the only band who's appeared on my top albums list in 4 years in a row, from 2010 to 2013. And this year, they are back with a brand new album called Ningen Hoki, or Abandoned Human as its English title will be known as, and it's going to be released on October 7th. And right now, we at No Borders No Race will be premiering a track from this new record. From Ningen Hoki, this is Tsushima Mamiure with Hangout. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck.
And Sawa Sensei, or Sawa Sensei.
Remind you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. What'd you say?
I said, how generous.
Yeah,
you know. Austin and Bostonian.
But you know what? It helps.
Thank you guys for listening. and thank you for being part of this, Evan.
You're welcome.
And Tom is not here, but thank you, Tom.
here, reminding you that what you hear each week on No Borders No Race is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed what you heard this week and want to support one of these musicians, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites and labels, or even your local record store. We always give our listeners and readers the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun, so if something resonated with you, give the album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help bring your favorite J-pop artist closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out, and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.